You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Tonight on the Cooligans, we are joined by MLS Cup champion, MLS Cup final goal scorer, Derek Etienne Jr. Can you believe it?
That's right, Patterson's own. Plus, we talked to Meg Linehan about everything that's happened in women's soccer, what's going on with the league, what's going on with the national team, that and more today on the Cooligans!
Hi, this is Ashlyn Harris
and Allie Krieger. And you are listening to our best friends and favorite comedians,
the Cooligans, bitch.
Yeah, baby! Come on!
Let's go! We gotta
get champ is here! Come on!
I'm so absolutely stoked for tonight's show. Welcome, everybody.
It's amazing.
Hello.
How come it sounds so distorted?
Let's get the introductions out of the way for us. We don't matter. It's not about
we
us
ain't
today.
That important right now. We ain't covered in confetti, okay?
But there is a little bit of distortion.
Like, we didn't go to the bathroom and wipe and be like, how did it get there?
Maybe
we're using too much confetti.
My voice sounds.
It's a fair
like
question.
A lot of
look,
static
there has to be confetti
speak,
reform
though.
For MLS Cup celebrations. Anyway, welcome to the show, everybody. My name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerrero.
All right, we are the Cooligans. We are your favorite stand-up comedians that host the funniest soccer show there is on the in the galaxy, okay?
And it also happens to be the gulliest, especially today.
Very much so, because today we are joined by MLS Cup champion, MLS Cup final goal scorer.
Right. Bring an MLS Cup to Silk City. Okay.
Alexis, please introduce, New Jersey's own Patterson's finest.
Come on. Not since Laurel and Hardy has Patterson shined this bright. Not since Trap Queen was released and people Google where Fetty Wap was from and they found out it's not Atlanta, it's Patterson, New Jersey. Not since they slipped you a little bit of extra arroz con pollo, a tropical delight, has Patterson been this excited. Ladies and gentlemen, the factories are back. The waterfall is flowing like it used to. All the way from Championship Soccer City right now, Columbus, Ohio. Ladies and gentlemen, pull aside, put the car in park, put the e-brake on, raise the window so you don't get carjacked because we got Patterson's own. Put your hands together for one and only Derek Etienne Jr., everybody.
Oh, man. You guys are too much.
You're dealing with the pressure of an MLS Cup final, and it's like, yo, the Cooligans, they got to tone it down a little bit. Okay?
Yeah,
bro, I just won a championship, and y'all doing too much. First question we got to ask, right? What did it feel like when you scored and you hit him with that? That freezing ice cold. How many names were running through your head hoping? I hope you watch it right now, fam.
So many. I thought, but honestly, like I was supposed to go back with Abubakar Keita, and we were supposed to dance, but that was way too far to jog to the other side of the field. And last time we did it, they didn't even get it on camera. So like, I had to really like think, and then I was like, yo, it's cold. That's how cold. So, all right.
That's Derek Ice Cold Etienne. That was what I was.
Freezing him out.
Dude, I mean, this is, look, and we will get to, we'll talk about the context of everything that happened with the Columbus Crew throughout the playoffs, throughout just the team in itself, where a couple years ago, they didn't think they would even be around. But the fact that, let's talk about, your story. I mean, see, the last time you were on the show, we didn't know what team you were going to go to.
It's November 2019.
Yeah. We were just like, all right, look, Derek is dope. He's we're fans of him. Let's talk to him. Let's see what's going on. Maybe we could put a good, he's on TV. Maybe we'd be like, yo, hire this dude. He's like, he knows what he's doing. But the fact that getting to Columbus and adapting so well and having Caleb Porter have faith in you and trust in you, what did that do for you and your confidence? And how you see the rest of your soccer career?
I think it did a lot. Like you said, like I actually came when I got on the show, I got the call from Red Bull that I wasn't going to be signing. So I wasn't signed. So I was just like, all right. And then you guys actually, I think it was Alexis who made a joke about, oh, Thierry Henry's in Montreal, you should go. I like almost started dying. Cause like, I was just talking to Montreal, maybe going to Montreal. So like when you said that, I was like, all right, don't try not to.
Yeah. No, okay. Like, poker face.
But yeah, but Caleb was really excited to have me come in, and he's really good friends with Jesse Marsh, and I had a really good experience with Jesse Marsh and a good relationship. So I felt like he could work, and then seeing the players, of course, playing Columbus all the time, and then them getting Darlington and getting Lucas, I think it was a perfect fit, and I just wanted to go in there and prove that, you know, I can be a key player on this team, and thankfully I was able to do that.
When you look at the opportunity that you were afforded starting an MLS Cup final, obviously it's got to be an amazing moment, but that also comes on the heel of some positive test results. Did that positive test result of COVID test results for Nagby and Santos, if I'm not mistaken, did that rattle you guys? Because it seemed, and one of our producers even said, it seemed like you guys were playing like with the, hey, you know what? Who gives a shit, right? Like, let's just go out there, be calm, be confident, and play our game. What was that moment like for you guys when you found out that Nagby and Santos wouldn't be able to play?
It was tough at first because, I mean, those are two big guys that we look to on the field for inspiration, whether that's, you know, the calmness that Darlington brings or the individual magic that Pedro can bring. But it was, you know, we kind of were kind of used to it because we had some guys test positive earlier and missed games. So for me, I was just coming back into the team after testing positive. So to hear another player, I was just thinking about, you know, how that feels, because I felt bad having to watch the team, you know, play without me, and then, you know, felt a little sad that I wasn't able to celebrate with them when they won the Eastern Conference. So I can only imagine how those two felt, you know, doing so much to get us here and not to be able to celebrate with us. You know, I just felt for that. But I think we were a very confident group, and we knew exactly what it was going to take to win the game. And we heard it. Of course, we were upset, but at the end of the day, we were professionals, and we knew that we could get the job done.
And look, you know, we have to be honest. As soon as we heard the positive results, we're like, even us, we have to apologize to you right
yes.
now.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, hey, yeah. Say it right now.
Yeah, I can't believe.
I saw some tweets.
No, I can't believe.
That's why when I saw the email, I said, yeah, I'm getting on here, and me and Alexis are going to talk about that.
Yeah, and what? I want to apologize to you for giving Christian the password to my Twitter account, because that was I'll never let that happen again.
We are sorry. I mean, look, this is it. Look, it's when you hear these names that are going to be missing the game, it's just like your brain, logically, you're just like, okay, well, you know, it's going to hurt the Columbus Crew's confidence, and the Sounders are just going to be dominant. But it was just a complete opposite. It was just you were on another one. It was like, you know what? We have something to prove here. You know, it's a team of 23 players on the roster or whatever. Like everybody's going to be involved, and if we're missing some pieces, somebody has to step up.
And I'm not going to apologize because I believed in you the whole time. Christian was the one who sent that tweet. Okay, I will admit it. Fine. All right, I picked Seattle, and the reason I picked Seattle was just it seemed like they were just, this is their moment. They're like the postseason sort of team where it's like doesn't even matter what they do in the regular season. They show up for the postseason. What did y'all do differently? Because y'all didn't even let them play. They were bodying everybody. What did you do different?
No, they got Jonathan Mensah. That helps.
That's what it is.
He's going to let him mush anybody he wants, apparently.
Yeah. Honestly, I just, like you said, we know when it comes to playoffs, they're a completely different team. So we wanted to try to, you know, stamp the game early, try to put our control on it. We didn't want to we understand how good they are in transition, especially with, you know, one of the best 10s in the league, Nicolas Adaro, and then with Jordan Morris on their break, and then Roy Diaz, those guys, Jovan Jones, they're very good players. So we felt that if we got into a track meet, you know, and let the game continue to be open, it would go in their favor. We knew that, you know, if we put a lot of pressure on them, make them uncomfortable, and we're a very good team with controlling possession, as long as we keep the ball and do the little things that we felt that we could do to break them down, which was, you know, get the ball and switch to point of attack quickly, especially with the speed that me and Diaz have. We can catch the outside backs, you know, high up the field, and we can get a break that we can get a goal. And I think that, you know, it put us in such a good spot early on in the game. And then, of course, when you have, you know, Lucas Zelarayan playing how he's playing, it makes things easy.
Yeah, how about that? How about that goal? We got a question from a fan as well, from Ian. He just simply asked, how'd that goal feel? I mean, that was just – look, ever since you've been on the show and we've gotten to know you, watching you at Columbus, I mean, when you got your first assist, I'm like, yo, let's go. I mean, there's nothing – it makes me so happy. But getting a goal in the MLS Cup final, that has to feel a little bit different. What was that moment like for you?
It was surreal. It was just like I got like a flashback of the whole like last year. Like
of Alexis's tweet, you know?
Seattle's gonna win. Yeah. I'm like, all right, I should have had it. Shut up, Alexis.
That would have been epic.
But nah, it was just like I always, you know, being a little kid, my dad always said, big time player, step up a big time game. So I always got that extra bite, and you know, I was able to score the supporter shield. I was able to score in the open, USL Cup. So, you know, just to get a MLS Cup in there, it's just feels amazing to get some goals and some big games, because, you know, it helps out the team ultimately.
And are you and Lucas Zelarayan going to send personal apology letters to Alex Roldan? Because what y'all did to that poor man. What y'all did to that poor man. I mean, everything had to come from that side. The poor dude. What did y'all say to shake him up, man?
We can't say anything. That's how the cookie crumbles.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're the guy, sometimes you're not, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We had another question from a Columbus Crew fan, and he simply said, "What did your dad say about the goal? Your dad's obviously a player as well. I'm sure he had a lot of influence on you. We talked about him a bunch when you were on the show in studio. So what did he have to say?"
He was super excited. So like when I was little, there was we watched Fear Factor, and there was like when they had like the parents, it was like the mom and the son, or the dad and the son, and they were doing it doing something, and they got it done, and the dad looked at the kid, "Who's the wild man now?" So after the game, I went up and I went to hug my mom, I went to hug my dad, and he was recording me hug my mom. He put his phone away. He's like, "Who's the wild man now?" And it was so funny. But he actually joked on me because he was talking about in the warm-up, I was missing all my shots in the warm-up. So I was like, "Yo, like, come on, man. Like, you got to step your game up." And then he's like, "Yeah, but I'm glad you scored, because if you'd have missed that, you look like an idiot because you were missing all the ones in the game." So I was like, "Yeah."
Dude, he doesn't let you get an inch, huh?
Not an inch. But yeah, he was super excited. He didn't. I think he cried, but he didn't cry in front of me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Can't let him see that, right?
Yeah, I'll never let him let me down.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Who's the wild man? Who's the crying man?
He's gonna cry in the court.
When you think about the first thing you do with a championship cup, right? Everyone's like, "Oh, I wanna drink beer out of it, or I wanna take it to my whatever, my mother's house." What's the first thing you want to do with this championship cup when everything opens up and you can get around and get out? Like, where you want to take MLS Cup first? Where you want to take a photo with it?
I don't even know. I haven't even thought about
front,
that.
Front of Rebel Arena? No.
Oh, my God!
What do you mean?
Rebel fans, I'm being this messy, was not me. This was not me. Rebel
I'm
mean
for no reason.
Not me. No, I think I'm gonna take the Yankee Stadium.
I'll make sure security don't let you in, bro.
Nah, I don't know. I'll probably... Honestly, I don't know. I couldn't even tell you.
Yeah.
I haven't even thought about that. I got a lot of time to think, so I probably should think about that. Yeah.
I'd probably take it to Rudd's Hut. you know?
I take it to Checkers, probably.
Let's go. Yeah, in the drive-thru.
Yeah. Free slushies on me.
Let me know what day that is. You know what I
mean? I'm interested in attending. Again, like I mentioned, we have a bunch of questions from Gully Squad, our supporters group, okay? It's not just the Nordic.
You know? Although some of them are in here, you know?
Yeah, we got a couple. So this question was from Val Paschal. She had asked, she said, did you get to have like a conference call or Zoom with Pedro and Darlington when you celebrated the win? What was that experience like for them? I know it's obviously bittersweet, but what was that? I know it probably meant a lot to be able to deliver that for your teammates that couldn't be there.
Yeah, well, when we were on the field, we FaceTimed them. So we were like, you know, we were still celebrating with them. They were, you know, still at home celebrating. I know for sure it sucked for them. But, I mean, we're talking about Darlington Nagbe.
Yeah,
you've already won it twice, bro. Come on.
Take this one off, will
you? Real. Yeah, bro. Like, come on. Let someone else have a turn. Like, yeah. Relax. But, they were extremely happy. Of course, upset they couldn't celebrate with us. But I think being able to see the phone calls and stuff and things like that in the locker room was great.
It's this question comes from Andrew Johnson. He asked a bunch, like, what was the song that got y'all hyped? What's your favorite Jenny's flavor? What's your pizza spot in Columbus? But the one I'm most interested in is the team is aware of a dozen or so fans who have vowed to get a tattoo of Josh Williams if he scores a banger. If they did that for you, and remember, this is one of the Nordic guys. If they were to do that for you, if they were to get a tattoo of you for scoring a banger, what pose would you want?
I mean, we already have this.
I think it had to be this. Yeah, I think that would have to be it.
Well, we got to put a chain on you if you do this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Have a buzz down Prezi or something, you know?
Yeah, put the Prezi on there right there, like this. That's right there.
And even just to go a little bit further, the Columbus Crew fans have definitely, you know, look, you haven't been able to really play in front of the fans too often. In like a full stadium regularly, but how have Columbus Crew fans embraced you? You know, what kind of messages are you getting? Helping get an MLS Cup, scoring the goal, and then what are you looking forward to for the new stadium next year? And why? I mean, Columbus is it's a hot team right now for more reasons than even just winning MLS Cup.
Yeah. The fans have been great. I was kind of nervous because they were kind of a rival of Red Bull. Right. Like there's always beef with Red Bull. So I was kind of nervous on how that was going to be. But, they accepted me with open arms. And then even when, the situation with during the protest, when I got pulled over, a lot of them, hit me up to let me know, like, yeah, that's not how we feel. We're extremely happy to have you here. So that was very comforting for the off-the-field aspect that, you know, they were there. But when every single game that we've had fans at, you know, they've gotten there early. They've sat in the cold when it snowed. So they've been great. And to be able to be going from a team that was almost, you know, out of the league a couple of years ago to winning MLS Cup, and to do it at home, the last game at Mapfre Stadium. I know that meant a lot to them, so we were just happy to do that. And I'm extremely excited about the new stadium, seeing it. I live 2 minutes away from it, so seeing how the building has gone and the infrastructure and the plans they have on it, I feel like it's going to be an amazing stadium, and it's going to do nothing but elevate the soccer here.
That's dope. So you live really close to it. That's a short commute. I'd be excited about that. But that's got to be kind of like a weird feeling. Like, you just won a championship cup there, and you get to look at this building being built downtown, and you're like, yo, I'm going to play in that as a champ. Like, that's kind of got to hit you, right?
I mean, I wasn't thinking about it that way. Like, I still smile every time you like, yeah, with the champ. I'm like, dad, I'm a champion now. Like, yeah, okay,
for sure.
Like, yeah, it's like, God, but, you won, yeah, and now they're building your castle right next door.
Building me a new crib down the street.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to be scootering down to the game. Hey, how you guys doing?
Hey, walk. We don't need you falling off that shit. Walk. Take it easy. Put on some Skechers or something. Yeah, something good Skechers, for the foot.
Yeah. Wrap myself up in bubble paper.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to ask, some of the other questions just referring to in Columbus, like how have you adapted there just living there? Obviously, this with COVID is strange and different, and you probably don't get to get the authentic kind of experience. Hopefully, that vaccine hits quick and we are good.
Let's go.
Andrew did ask, what is your favorite pizza spot in Columbus? I mean, I feel like this is a cool against. We should probably discuss it.
I can't remember the name of the spot. I get it off Uber Eats all the time.
Okay.
What is your go-to meal? Because, I mean, you know, Columbus obviously got different food.
I got my go-to meal. I've been doing a lot of cooking myself here. You know, I've been Chef Boyardee, you know, chefing it up for myself. probably I've gone to the place Forno that makes good chicken parm. So I probably say that's my go-to spot. That was my go-to spot before, like, things started to get crazy out here. But yeah, for the most part, I've been cooking on my own. I'm a king with the lamb chops, though. Lamb chops, fuego.
Yeah.
No one can touch me with the lamb chops. I've been at other places eating lamb chops. Like, they might as well hire me.
Yeah.
I can do way better than
I need to talk to the chef right quick. Put him on.
What season is this?
That's how my mom is whenever we go. If we go to a Dominican restaurant, she's just like, what is this? What? Like, literally just judging. I could have done this at home. Why are we here?
You know? Exactly, yeah. Y'all could have paid me for this. Like, yeah.
My mom does the same thing. Whenever I get Cuban food or I bring over like a Cuban sandwich, she'll taste it and she'll be like, they must be from the other part of Cuba, because this ain't how we do it in Havana, you know?
My dad just learned how to start making, like, Haitian rice and stuff, so he'd be FaceTiming me. Yeah, what you know about this? I'm like, I've been to Haiti too, guys. Come on, like, okay, you know how to cook. Congratulations. I bet you don't taste like grandpa's, though. He said, well, we'll never know. Exactly, because you and Papa taste some that. You know, he'll say something.
We need to do a Derek Etienne versus Derek Etienne Jr. cook-off, just to see.
Oh, he don't want that smoke.
I guess it's good to be, like, to have this competitive relationship with your own father, right? You know, you already have, like, a challenge. It just makes you a stronger mm-hmm. competitor, because you've been competing with your blood this entire your entire life. Basically,
exactly. Yeah. I think after the game, he finally like admitted it to me, because we've always talked about, like, he played in the USL and he won MVP. So when I got when I scored in the USL, he's like, yeah, but you didn't win MVP. So like he's always held that over my head. Then we won Supporter Shield, and he's like, well, that's not really a trophy, it's a shield. So I mean, if you want that,
damn.
Dad is just like, yeah. All the other Twitter trolls. He's like,
yeah, dad, yeah. Is dad in the South Ward? Hold me hard on you, bro.
But then when I won the cup, I looked over at him and I was like, yeah, I got a goal and got MLS Cup. You ain't got that. He looked at me. You got it.
Thing you got to do is when you get the ring, you got to take a picture of it and change his phone background to that ring without telling him. So when he opens it next, he knows what's good.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much, Derek. I know you're busy getting over your celebrations. You know what I mean? And you took the time out to talk to us. Absolutely amazing. Is there something you want to say to the fans? A lot of Columbus fans are listening right now, and you just won. This is the first opportunity to hear from you. So what do you want to say to the fans?
First things first, thank you guys for having me back here. Like, cause I know it was hard looking at me after you just counted my team out. It's cool. We're still boys. I'm not gonna hold a grudge.
Thank you for forgiving me, man.
But nah, to the Columbus fans, I'm glad we were able to end this crazy, crazy year like this. Like LeBron James said, possibly won the hardest championship. I'm not saying that's what it is, but LeBron said it, so it must be true.
Okay. Derek Etienne, the LeBron James of soccer. Yeah.
No. Delete that. No.
Now I know what Derek meant when he said he wishes he was in Space Jam. It should have been him.
You know what? love this. Thank you guys for everything. I appreciate you guys. You can follow me on the gram and Twitter only if you have banter, though. If you're going to take like stuff serious, just don't even waste your time following me. Amazing. But it's DETN10, man of the people sometimes.
Derek, dude, we're so proud of you. So happy for you, man. This is just great. I mean, look, just in 1 year, you'll be able to overcome a lot of obstacles and a lot of challenges. So happy for you. Hopefully this is not your last MLS Cup and more success in the MLS Cup playoffs. So, dude, thank you so much. It's an absolute honor to have you on the show, especially right now. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. We have so much more show. We're going to be joined by Meg Linehan of The Athletic. So come right back after this.
Hey everybody, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. We just want to break up with a word from one of our sponsors, us and you.
That's right, Gully Squad. The last, during quarantine, Gully Squad has not only become a dope soccer community, but it's becoming a vital space for my emotional well-being.
Okay? Yes, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have anyone to talk to a lot of the time. And also, I would not know what an apple crisp is.
Okay, yeah, we are. There's so much communication and sharing of food. It's I don't really dwell in that channel too much.
No, you're not allowed to. Your girl can see it on your face that you're looking at food.
She goes through my phone not to look for like texts from other girls. She's like
booty pick, booty pick, booty pick sandwich.
Sam, what is this? How dare you betray me like this?
She's messaging me, homewrecker.
Gully Squad is obviously the Cooligans community of people that are fans of soccer, fans of comedy, fans of food, fans of pizza. It's an opportunity to help support the content that we put out, help us put out more content that we can deliver to the masses, and also get some exclusive content for yourself. So there's a bunch of really cool things going on in there. We have an amazing Slack channel that may or may not exist. Who knows?
Hey, even though we just talked about it.
Exactly, but you know, it's vague. It's very vague. So you can join at any level. You can join, you can give like $5, $10, you can give more. If you give more, there's more perks involved, like merch and a pin and stickers and different things like that. So it's, if you're a fan of soccer, if you're a fan of comedy, we highly recommend you joining, and it definitely helps the show grow, so we can do a bunch of other fun things, you know, in 2021, when we can finally travel, we can be able to go do live shows and do live events and do a lot of other things like that. So
plus you get some really exclusive stuff, like when we release the pins, you get a pin for joining.
That's right.
When we release the pop socket, you got a pop socket for joining, stuff like that. So there's a lot of really good exclusive stuff. It's not just being a part of the Slack channel that may or may not exist, but trust me, that's a dope part of it.
Very much so. So go to soccercooligans.com and click on the Join Gully Squad button now.
Hi, baby. We're back on a Cooligans Living Room FC, and finally our guest is here, and this is one of my favorite guests to have. My favorite part, and the audience doesn't get to hear this, but right before we say action, she actually tells us the schedule for NWSL. She just won't give it to you online. She told us already. Amazing. Yeah.
Look, that's just the relationship we have. It's really the thing we tell her. Like, you can't come on the show until you release the schedule to us directly. Yeah.
And we actually test her. We're like, April 12th. And she's like, it's not my this team is playing this team. It's a friendly, you know, everything. We're ready. But honestly, I mean, who do you go to when you want to find out what's happening in women's soccer? This is the top of the heap. And of course, that's who we get. We only get the Maybach, the Bugattis of journalists. Okay. And that's exactly what we have here. One of my absolute favorite people in all of soccer as well. You probably know her from all of her writing at The Athletic and all of her writing about women's soccer. Ladies and gentlemen, unless you're driving, in fact, have some respect and pull over and put your hands together for the one, the only, Meg, the sniper, Linehan.
What's good?
I figured I would wear my Rams jersey because I get to, you know, at least rep a team and feel like I have a rooting interest, but I figure I might as well bring my pain along with me.
Yeah. And are you originally from Boston or the New England
area?
Yeah.
Like North Shore of Boston. So for me, like, I mean, I grew up basically going to Gillette used to be, you know, Foxborough Stadium, all the different names that it had. But I mean, I remember going to a U.S. men's national team game against Jamaica at that stadium and being stuck in traffic out in the parking lot for, I think, 4 hours trying to get home. So,
wow. Yeah. It's like its own little city that we went
really
to. Gillette
is
the one we went to. It's wild. I'm like, man, this parking lot is wild. It took us like 4 hours to find where the fans were. I was like, where are we going? How many times did we go around this?
Yeah, no, it's its own little complex. I mean, that's a nice thing about being a supporter in the supporters groups, because you get like the fast access out of the stadium after a game, which is incredible. So it's definitely worth it.
Let's get these hoodlums out of here as fast as possible.
We had a great time with the Midnight Marauders.
Midnight Riders.
Riders. Correct. Sorry.
Yep. That was us too.
All right. So let's begin. We brought you on because there's too much news in soccer, especially women's soccer, that, you know, there's a lack of transparency when it comes to a lot of things going on, especially with the Utah Royals. So we need an update. Forget the viewers. Just talk to us, man.
Yeah, because no one's listening.
It's just us. What is going on? The last we heard, obviously, the Utah Royals were informed, all the players, that they were the team is going to be moving back to Kansas City, right? Because it was the team had folded in Kansas City and went and they started one up in Utah. So, starting in Kansas City, what is the sort of the details of that move? Who is going to be the ownership group? What is it going to look like to have women's soccer back in Kansas City?
Yeah, all right. So let's start with the actual transaction part of it, right? So obviously, first of all, on the Utah side, all of this starts with all of this reporting that's been happening around Dolly Hansen, right? Both being like the racist comments, the racist behavior, then also this toxic culture that has been happening in Utah on both like the Real Salt Lake Royals, Monarch side, basically like throughout the entire organization. So there is this kind of, you're going to sell this team, right? And it's not necessarily implied on the NWSL side, but they are stuck in that same boat of like, okay, well, we can't really have this guy running a team. So what actually happened and was announced on Monday, December 7th, is that NWSL essentially bought the team back from Dolly Hansen. Right. So those rights go back to the league. And then what happens is they then award an expansion team to a new ownership group in Kansas City that is run by Angie and Chris Long, who are essentially, you know, like investor type people. Right. But very much in the Kansas City community. And so you essentially get this transfer of a team, but it is technically two distinct parts of a sale. And this is essentially the reverse of what had happened in 2017. FC Kansas City shutters under that previous owner. Dolly Hansen comes in and gets an expansion team that then becomes Utah Royals. So we're now just kind of getting the reverse 3 years later and the return of NWSL in Kansas City.
But it's not FC Kansas City.
It is not, and I don't think that the brand is going to be brought back, right? I mean, they have not decided on a team name, the brand. They still have to announce training and the stadium facilities. I'm sure we will get to where they're going to play in a few minutes. But, you know, I think this is going to basically be NWSL 2.0 in Kansas City, right? Because FC Kansas City had a lot of success on the field, back-to-back championship wins, right? Like when you think of NWSL early years, I mean, I think about FC Kansas City. You have Lauren Holiday, the greatest women's national team players that we've ever had, right? Like that first part of the league where you really had this true rivalry between Seattle Reign, who kept winning everything, and then FC Kansas City, who just like continuously, you know, Vlatko Andonovski, then head coach, now with the U.S. national team, just really found a lot of success in those two back-to-back championships. But this is now kind of like fresh start, brand new ownership. The ownership is local. It also involves a few other people, but including Brittany Matthews, who used to be a former professional player, is now in fitness. I mean, we have seen the tweets that refuse to name her and just call her Patrick Mahomes' fiance, which the struggle of that. But really, like,
I know her as the girl who screams on IG stories when Patrick Mahomes does very well. You know what I mean? She loses her mind.
Now, which is relatable. The other way around.
Yeah. So It really is. And I've spoken with Angie and Chris Long, finally had an article up at The Athletic and really trying to get a sense of knowing them. And what's really interesting to me is actually that they went to college with Karen Nortman, who is one of the owners of Angel City, right? Like when you think about Angel City, the really the start of that team is Natalie Portman and Karen Nortman, which is slightly confusing, but the two of them and Karen Nortman, even before Angel City was really officially a go, was having these conversations with the two of them being like, you know, why don't we have a team in Los Angeles? And then Angie Long is being like, well, why don't we have a team in Kansas City? We used to. We're supposed to be Soccer City USA. Why don't we have a team here? Like, how do you say that you're Soccer City USA without a Division I professional women's team?
So for everyone watching and listening, Kansas City is supposed to start playing in 2021.
Yep.
And they just announced this like a week ago. All right. Yeah. I mean, you ain't got a lot of time. It's like you forgot your family was coming over for the holidays. You're like, just throw green shirts up. I don't know. We have to do something, you know?
Right. They don't have a name, brand, facilities announced. Like they're going to end up at T-Bone Stadium, which is the minor league baseball stadium in town. I think there are probably long-term plans to build a more permanent soccer-specific something for the team. But I think that this is absolutely one of the tightest turnaround times we've ever gotten in the league. And also now the NWSL season is longer, right? So it used to be that you might actually have some time through the winter into early spring. Season begins mid-April. Now we've got the draft January 13th. We've got preseason February 1st. Challenge Cup is back, but before the start of the regular season. So that's mid-April. And then you've got the regular season in mid-May. And they've got to build everything. And granted, this work has already been in the works, right? Like, it's not like someone just handed them a team on December 7th and said, okay, Godspeed. Like, good luck. They have been working on, like, they came in already having hired a head coach, right? Who I'm sure is already prepping for the draft and has a sense of it and work very closely with Vlatko Andonovski, is very much like a local legend in Kansas City soccer, right? Like they're well positioned there. But in terms of selling season tickets, getting people in the door, building that game day experience, like there is so much work. And so as I keep saying, like, I don't really envy what must be their to-do list between now and mid-April, but they're...
Yeah,
I mean, they don't have a choice at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be the next couple months are just going to be people being like, oh, there's a women's team back. Yeah. What's that? Like, it's just people kind of just startled that NWSL is back. But it's fascinating to know. And obviously, I'm hoping it's successful and it works out and exciting to see the Utah Royals are good. So hopefully we'll see that back in Kansas City. Before I want to talk about the U.S. Women's National Team and their recent settlement, but I want to ask very quickly, we were just talking about Kansas City. What is the concern or issue or discussion when it comes to Sporting Kansas City allowing a women's team to use Children's Mercy Park? It seems like this is a non-conversation and there's nothing that can be done or said, but it seems like it's just so perfect that why wouldn't you do it?
It seems like, you know, those kids who you like having an argument with and they just turn around. You know what I mean? It seems like that's what they're doing. It's like, yo, come on, this is perfect. Why aren't you paying attention?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is really interesting. I mean, Kansas City, back when this whole thing first really started coming to light, provided a statement to The Athletic, and they were like, hey, we're dedicated to women's soccer, but really, like, we've got to focus on our own things, which, fine. But, you know, fundamentally, it is a stadium. We have seen other stadiums balance three teams at once. It does not seem impossible. I do think that there is maybe a little something to 2021 as a season being just as complicated in terms of the actual scheduling. Like, you know, like you're going to have dates left open probably still to allow for postponements of games, you know, like, so I think there might be some of that. I do also think like there has been history between Sporting Kansas City, the NWSL, and there's also just kind of, you know, whenever you're talking about the NWSL as an entity and asking for things from MLS or other kind of governing bodies, U.S. soccer is also involved in a lot of this. So I think that there is some stuff going back to 2017 when NWSL kind of reached out to Sporting KC and was like, hey, would you like to save this team? Wouldn't that be convenient for everyone?
And then that did not go well. I think there's some stuff even going back further. But I do think that there might still be wiggle room, honestly. Like, I think that if there is some public pressure and it catches some steam, I think there might be some wiggle room, at least to get some games there. Maybe not every single game, but I think we have seen Sporting KC share the stadium, at least for a few games a season, with FC Kansas City. That, to me, does not feel like it should be completely, like, impossible, right? Like, there's got to be room for compromise. Maybe it's not your home stadium, but you could put a few games there and get, like, a real test of what the potential for a crowd at CMP is. But at the same time, like, again, with this tight turnaround time, I think you have to focus on what you can actually control. And if that's going to be a huge fight, I think that there are better things for this brand new team to spend their time and energy on. And maybe, honestly, like, maybe they get to look like the good guys if there's this giant social media campaign out here against Sporting KC to let a women's team use their stadium. And then they can be like, hey, like, we just want to work together, right? Like,
you know,
like, I think that there's a couple different paths this can go, but I would like to think that there is at least room for a compromise that we could see, you know, a handful of games, the way that Sky Blue tested out Red Bull Arena before they actually moved in there. Like, that's kind of what I'm hoping for at the moment, at least.
Okay. It also seems like, you know, it's going to look bad if you don't release a statement.
Yeah,
you know?
Like, say something, it is, you know? I mean, and like, yes, they did release the statement in that first story that we did. But I mean, optically, it just seems really weird. And it also, like, the thing that I can't get over is, again, you've got the concept of Soccer City USA for Kansas City. That is a title that they desperately want. And I personally don't think you get to say that you are Soccer City USA without fully embracing your women's professional team. But even that aside, to consistently get this message of, we were given the chance to help women's professional soccer and we have consistently passed on it, is not a great look. But it's also just like, you could get like an easy win here. Like, you can look like you're doing the right thing. Why not do it?
For marketing, it's a smart move to be like, look, maybe we can't, but a couple games.
We're using, you know, the like, mom guilt tactic. Yeah. Whatever it takes. Yeah. We'll do, because there's no reason why. I mean, we see Sporting Kansas City games. We see the you know, the blue hell and the level of support and energy from Sporting Kansas City fans. Why, it just seems crazy to just not have it. It just seems like it'll just work out too well.
I just also would really like to think that Sporting KC is not threatened by a women's professional team, because fundamentally, I think we have seen that when you have a men's and women's professional team in the same city, like, you know, and Portland is always going to be Portland and its own special thing. But, you know, there are ways to actually grow the game together and work together and also support each other. And right at the moment, like, I think it makes it really hard for you not to look at what the team is doing and going like, are you threatened? Like, do you not want to give up your hold on the city? Yeah. And you think that a woman's professional team would draw people away from yours? Whereas instead, there's probably a lot more room for growth, especially ahead of, you know, Kansas City is looking to be a 2026 host city.
Right.
Why would you not want to work together to both make sure that you are a host city, but that you are growing the game at all levels on both the men's and women's side together? And the message from the new Kansas City NWSL team is, we want to collaborate. We want to collaborate. And then you also have this message from the other side of that is just kind of like this strange silence minus a tweet of like, welcome to town.
Yeah. They treat it like Instagram DMs from people. You get like, yo, want to collab? Like, on what? I don't know. You make a t-shirt? And like,
no, collab. Do you want to collab on a collab?
What is that?
I love Meg. Meg's energy is like the nicest Bronx energy of all time. You said like, what are you, scared? And oh, you have a bid for 2026? Would be a real shame if something were to happen to that. It's like the sweetest threat of all time. I love it.
So the other thing, the U.S. Women's National Team, they recently settled with the U.S. Soccer Federation when it came to equal
working conditions,
right?
Yeah, logistics, yes. Money, yes. No.
But this apparently, you know, we had the update from it was struck down as far as the equal pay dispute, but the plan was to appeal that. And you know, Cindy Parlow Cohn has been at least from her statement offered a little bit of maybe transparency, or at least like, to me, finally some humanity to U.S. soccer,
awareness.
Saying like, hey, we can't give you, you know, $70 million in back pay because that would bankrupt the federation. But what is what are the kind of the details of that settlement? Are the players happy with it? And what's like the future of that relationship with USSF?
Yeah, I mean, I think the really interesting thing about that settlement coming through is that it was really the first time both sides have like been happy, right? Like usually when you're covering that and you're like talking to both sides, like there's this kind of like tenseness. And instead, you know, both times I was talking to US Soccer and to the players reps, like everyone was like, no, this is good, right? And I think fundamentally it was probably honestly better for US Soccer that day. And I also think US Soccer, and especially Cindy Parlow Cohn, really, like, honestly, that's the first time they've ever won an optics battle, honestly, yeah, with the players. Like, first time you actually walk out, they got their quotes out there. Cindy Parlow Cohn, honestly, is not saying anything super different than former president Carlos Cordero. I mean, his preferred method of communication was, like, those terrible open letters, right? But, like, fundamentally, it's the same message of, hey, we can't make up the prize money bonus. But listen, if we figure this out and we compromise, then we get to work together. But the main difference with Cindy Parlow Cohn is that she's a former player. She has also fought against her own federation. She's lived through it. And again, you're exactly right. Like there is a humanity here that we have not seen. And I mean, even on that call that she had with media, she was just like, this is a good day. And I hope people see that this is a new US soccer. So like, that's really one of the first good positive signs I think that we have seen in a long time. As to like the actual like nitty-gritty of the agreement, it was really just again settling like the tail end of this lawsuit that had actually been allowed to proceed to trial about working conditions, the travel stuff, support staff, venue selection, and US Soccer agreed to essentially make it equal for the men's and women's national team for the next 3 years. It's going to be worked into the CBA. All the players have to agree to it. Like, this is not technically across the line, the judge has to approve it. It's a proposed settlement instead of like an actual like, hey, we're done here. Great. But the players are happy.
It felt good though. It felt good to see the statement. You were like, oh, we don't have to make an excuse here.
Right. And also like, I mean, the players are now one step closer to appeal. So they're happy on that front. I still think that, you know, and based on the conversations I've had, I talked with Alex Morgan for a different story, but I brought up the settlement and she was like, it's a good sign. It's not where we want it to be, but it is a good sign. Like, we need to see more from the federation. But on the other hand, you have the federation being like, please tell us a time. We will talk to you. We will talk to you. We will talk to you. And I guess really the question still is, can you get that bridge to actually meet in the middle on a compromise where it comes to the equal pay stuff? Can you actually, you know, if Cindy Parlow Cohn is to be believed, right, which I think she is, she does really want to turn that attention to a global focus, which maybe they did not believe from US Soccer before, because again, you're putting it in this historical context of like, hey, go play that game, be grateful for what we give you. And now you might actually believe a former player who's like, we could fight this fight together.
Yeah.
There is a possibility that maybe
at least you're getting closer to that end, which is great. We got more
they
with
start
Megan
like,
when we get back.
You know, here, and now they're like, here.
Yeah.
So, it's at least that first step towards.
Hey, we can
something.
Start to see the whites of each other's eyes. But yeah, we're getting closer.
All right. Thank you so much to Meg Linehan of The Athletic. Make sure you check out her work on The Athletic. Follow her on Twitter at It's Meg Linehan. Becoming the pillar. You know, like those pillars that are appearing all over the world. That is what Meg Linehan is.
She's a monolith that we're all scared of. Is that what you're saying?
Soccer. Okay. Meg, is there anything you want to let people know about before we sign off?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, the general stuff at The Athletic, the podcast, full-time with Meg Linehan, the digital show, The Fixture with ICC. So, you know, all the usual spots. If you don't want to ask me when the schedule is coming out, I would appreciate it.
Join her Patreon for the schedule. I think just make the money, Meg. Don't worry about it.
So thank you again, Meg. Make sure you follow at Fubo Sports as well. Follow at Soccer Cooligans on all social media channels. And make sure to subscribe to the Fubo Sports YouTube channel for full episodes of the program. Hit subscribe there as well. Mm-hmm. All right, Meg.
The Cooligans!
And at this, you are quite familiar. So for Meg Linehan, my name is Christian Polanco.
That's right, I'm Alexis Guerrero.
And together, what are we?
The Cooligans!